Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
What's happening, everybody? We got Dr. Homebrew back on the airwaves. And with me, of course, as always, Brian Schaar and Brian Cooper. What's going on, fellas? Long time no see.
Yeah, hey, man. Well, I didn't see you at the Spring Brews Fest, but...
No, I was at home. Kidding me? I'm not trying to catch COVID.
Hiding pretty well.
Yeah.
No, I had my daughter, and it's she's 14, so it's like it's the 21 and over thing, and I would have liked to have gone. I mean, it's a mile from my house, but, you know, it's just... I like my daughter time. And I can drink beer anytime. I'll go to the next Brews Fest.
Yeah, I heard it was good though, Cooper.
It was fun. Yeah, we helped pour some beers at Tasty's Tasting Room in honor of our good friend Mike McDowell, who we lost last year, and you know, tried our best to carry on the tradition without him. And you know, I think we had 22 kegs on there. Born for people, we blew the vast majority of those, and it was a lot of fun. Well, we're gonna talk more about that a little later on.
Okay, with, you got you act like he did. You act like he did anything at that. You know, we're pouring beers to carry on. He didn't pour any beers. Are you crazy?
Well, he started.
That's
it,
a tradition. So. If that's a tradition you want to carry on, it's not doing it. It's hiring other people to do your work for you. That's what you should do.
And were there low hugs at Tasty's Tasting Room?
Oh, I don't know. But you know what there is? Five Star Chemicals. You go to fivestarchemicals.com right now and learn the best two ways to improve your beer, improve your brewing, which is cleaning and sanitizing. You can't do one without the other. I mean, you can, but you shouldn't. Not very effectively. Anyway, but if you want a path to great beer, if you want a path to increase your brewing ability, it's cleaning and sanitizing. You got to start with your equipment, and there's no better company that will help you doing that with than Five Star. So go to fivestarchemicals.com today. All right, for the first part of the show, we're joined by Justin. And Justin, you are throwing a competition, right? So we're here to talk to you a little bit about competition and how to throw a competition really quickly because you wanted to do it like tomorrow, right? Or something like that? What's your story,
something
man?
Something like that. So,
yeah, what's going on? Welcome to the show, buddy.
What's up, guys?
Oh, man.
So I'm Justin, also known as the Beer Dad. I host the Beer Dad and Brewed podcast. We've been around for about 2 years.
Nice.
And we had my original co-host, Joshua Conkle, who was huge in the homebrew community. He was the president of the Coachella Valley Homebrew Club, passed away in a car accident, actually on National Homebrew Day, May 1st last year.
Oh, damn, dude. Sorry to hear that.
Terrible to hear
and,
that.
And he was a close friend of mine, you know, prior to the podcast. And we really started getting things done. We started traveling and going to a bunch of breweries, and we were just having a great time. And, you know, he passed away unexpectedly, and I didn't know what to do from there. And his family said that it was the time of his life, and they wanted me to continue the podcast. So with someone that had been on the show before, kind of sliding into his position, and we just keep it going on in his memory and doing the things that we were already doing, you know, talking about craft beer and home brewing. And if you ever listen to our show, it's like basically a bottle share, and you know, either we're at a brewery talking to the owner of the brewery and sharing their beers, or we're sharing homebrew. It just depends on what week and what we're doing.
I like the chill, relaxed vibes. Yeah, like you said, it's kind of just like having a beer with your friends, just kind of listening to people chat about it. Like
we don't
having a beer with knowledgeable people who care about the beer passionately.
Absolutely. So when he died, I did a huge fundraiser with both GoFundMe, and then we had a festival at our bottle shop that's our sponsor. And we're going to do it again. We're going to still have the festival, but prior to the festival, I wanted to have a homebrew competition and have the judging done in May. And then in June at the festival, we'd like to announce the winner, and the winner is going to get a scholarship to Cal Poly Pomona to go to brewing school in Joshua's name.
Wow.
So
that's great.
We're in crunch time to try to put this together, but I figured it's a good time with the Vail Lake thing going on, and there's a lot of homebrew competitions going on. So I figured a lot of homebrewers in Southern California and anywhere for that matter are probably entering a lot of beers right now. So it'd be a good time to get things going.
Watch out. Those guys from competitive homebrewing are going to swoop in.
I was just going to say, don't tell competitive homebrewing.
A crowd of locusts. Known
so
as
when,
Andy
when
and
in
Matt,
May are you thinking of doing this? Beginning, middle, or end?
I was thinking sometime middle May. I already have the spot, the craft lounge in Beaumont, California. It's a bottle shop and taproom. That's where we're going to have the festival. The owner, Jimmy's already offered up his shop for us to do the judging. I also have some local breweries willing to hold the beers for okay. people to drop off as well. So most of them are out in the desert, but I'm working on some closer into the Riverside area to kind of increase, because I know a lot of people are like, well, I'm not driving out to Palm Springs.
I'm sure More Beer will help you out too in Riverside there.
Absolutely. They were More Beer in Riverside. Shout out to them, because the last Kunkel Fest, we had a silent auction and they donated a huge prize for the silent auction. We had, I think it was two torpedo kegs, a $150 gift card, and some other doodads. So we had that during the silent auction. And so that was really successful. Like I said, we raised $26,000 for his family.
Really? $26,000?
Yeah.
That's great.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Man, yeah, I hope people like me that much. If I ever, die unexpectedly like that, that's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, Joshua, he was really loved in the beer community. He's been around. He never went pro, although he had been threatened many times. And the unfortunate thing is he was about to go pro. A lot of people don't know. He was the day that he died was the day he was driving up to Santa Rosa to move in with his fiance, and he may or may have not been looking to start in the pro profession in the Santa Rosa area.
Oh, man.
He didn't make it.
No.
So he never got to go pro, although his recipes have been made by several breweries. He's won several competitions. And then, in fact, when he died, all the breweries in the desert, including a couple in Riverside County and the Inland Empire, they came to me and asked for some of his recipes, and they all made tribute beers to him. Mm. So that was kind of cool. And then this year, we're probably going to have a couple breweries make some of his recipes as well.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, you're planning this competition and you need to do it in fairly short order. It sounds like you're already thinking about some of the big picture things, like where you're going to do the judging, mm-hmm. who's going to, where the entry storage will be done. And you also have to think about transport. You have to, if you're assuming you're the organizer, you need to decide how many bottles or cans per entry you need, and then multiply that by your entry cap if you have one.
Right.
I think too, in a competition like this, an interesting thing to think about is who's going to want to win this prize. As far as you might have a seasoned brewer that in a, day job, like me, that it would be fun to go to brewing school, but I wouldn't maybe have the time to do it. So you want to figure out a way to cater it to people that you would love to encourage to enter it and be the one who wins that. And, people who are brewing and coming up in the hobby, maybe younger folks that have some flexibility in their lives yet and looking to continue their education in some way. So, maybe go pro themselves and that could be a way that your buddy, passes on his legacy in another way, unbeknownst to him. So, That's some good stuff to think about. And so judges, of course, are the other big thing. And you have to find a good judge coordinator.
Right.
A lot of times you'll look to the people who are like the key, the judging people in the area. I think I've pointed you towards a couple people already down near you, and you probably already know some of them, but you can, talk to them. And if they aren't able to do it themselves, obviously may be able to point you to the right people to do it. Just really networking and figuring out who can help you in those roles. And
I've already got some feelers out there. I've talked to Devin Sanchez at Desert Beer Company, and he's got me in the right track. I judged the homebrew competition that they did, I think, was it 2 years ago for Props and Hops Festival. And so I got to be a part of that, and that was a really great experience. And so some of the people that I met through them or through that, event, I've sent out feelers to. So we've got quite a few people looking to assist. And then of course I've, been in contact with Josh's club about getting stewards and stuff like that, to help out. So there's several people interested. So I'm hoping to hoping to pull it together. It's one of those things where I think once the word starts getting out officially and I start putting things out on social media, I think it's going to, we'll probably see some bottles showing up relatively shortly, because it's a big prize, you know, and fortunately I have, you know, we have a good sponsor there at the Craft Lounge that is, you know, helping us out with giving that prize away. So by having that festival and raising money, so we'll be able to give that to somebody, because, you know, some people probably are thinking about wanting to do it, and they think, oh, well, that's a lot of money to put into something that's not guaranteed, you know?
Right.
I think it's a great prize. I think, you know, it took me a while to think of something to honor Joshua, and something that, you know, he was extremely passionate about, was brewing, and especially teaching others. So I think it'd be great to have, you know, someone to go to. And from what I understand, the Cal Poly Pomona program is really good. So
sounds cool.
Cool. Yeah. Justin, are you planning on having this be a competition registered with the BJCP?
Yeah, I think so. So, and I was talking to Brian about it. But, you know, obviously I'm going to do this competition no matter what, but I want to get my ducks in a row, because I feel like if I make it more of an official thing, it will be less chance of somebody saying, well, you know what, this competition wasn't fair, you know, especially if somebody I know, God forbid, somebody I know wins, or somebody that is like a loose affiliate or a friend of a friend, you know, and then there's somebody that might say, hey, well, you know, this competition's rigged. Like that's why I sent the message, because I wanted to make sure that this competition is 100% the right way. Whoever wins is going to deserve to win, whoever it is.
Right. If you start on the competition center on the Beer Judge certification program, you know, you can run your competition that way without having it be BJCP certified. But if you get it certified and you follow to the letter of the law of their, you know, their rules, it's, even if it was someone that you knew that won, you would still be able to say that it was done fairly, and you know, that the judging was all blind. The judges did not have any knowledge of the entries or entrance, just other than being presented as such and such style. And
I can't imagine that's the thing you really would have to worry about, though, Justin. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, I haven't heard about it ever really. Well, I can't, maybe a long time ago, but also who cares? Fuck them.
Right.
You know, the reason why I bring it up is not in terms of whether it's going to be perceived as being fair, because like JP says, I think it rarely comes up that happens. It's just the point is it's $30 to register the competition, and that will help you get judges, because speaking from experience, that's one of the hardest things to do about running a competition, especially, you know, maybe a small to mid-sized competition. And I don't know how many judges there are. I mean, we're lucky in the Bay Area that we have judges pretty thick on the ground here. Some areas, they're not so much. And maybe people would come out from LA who might be maybe not even know you or know people that are involved, if they know that, oh, I can get some points for judging this and have a fun day and then go home. Yeah. And then it also gets the competition on the BJCP competition calendar in terms of getting entries.
Another thing that you want to do to treat your judges well is to feed them and
starve them.
You know,
they're all in puppy containers. Them, yeah. Stack them five high. Leave the windows rolled up.
Yeah. I mean, there's a competition up in the foothills where they do, you know, awesome like Hawaiian barbecue, or there's stuff like the chef guy that does the, you know, or whatever. Yeah. They just like do really awesome food with them. It's known for that.
Treat them too good. Yeah.
I remember the one that we did for Props and Hops. Josh was out there. He brought one of those Blackstone grills and he was making breakfast burritos. And I have never seen breakfast burritos disappear so fast. There were some hungry judges.
And something else you'll want to think about in terms of there's an interplay between how many judges you think you're going to have and how many entries you think you're going to get. And you can do some scaling on that based on how heavily you promote the competition, right? So let's say, you know, for a within a reasonable certainty, you're going to have, let's say, 20 judges because they're friends or what, you know, they're going to show up.
Right.
you can calibrate how much you want to advertise your competition. So you can back out. Okay, I have 20 judges. That means I can do this many flights. You know, they can handle this many. You know, with a month and a half, 2 months to go, you don't really have time to mess around with prelims, right? Probably you're going to have entries coming in 4 to 6 weeks. And people aren't going to have a chance to brew for this unless they brew something that can ferment out fast. You might get some pale ales and things like that, but you're going to be, people aren't going to be able to brew some of the big styles in time for the competition. They'll have to kind of pull what's in their library or brew something lighter more quickly. You know, the risk that you run, and my homebrew club did a small competition for a while, and that was one of the early factors that happened for us. It's like, well, we have this many judges. How widely do we want to advertise this? Because if we end up getting, you know, 300 entries, we won't have the manpower to be able to judge those and get it done.
Right.
You might want to think about having an entry cap just to keep it, especially if it is your first time doing it. You have maybe a limited judge pool and you want to, you know, limit it to the people that would really be able to use that prize maybe somehow. Yeah. Think about all that.
When is the time to set a cap? I mean, if we're coming up on, let's say, 3 weeks to the entry deadline and you have 10 judges and no more coming in, you're like, well, then I should set the cap, or what is that? When does that happen? Because I imagine, you, like you said, you want to make sure you don't have three judges and 400 entries.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you're trying to encourage judges to come in and they're registering as your entries are filling up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you get behind, I mean, a lot of people just set the entry cap up ahead of time and they go, well, okay, I can probably get about 2 dozen judges for this competition and have them judge X number of flights each. I can judge this many beers and not have them have to have 12 in a flight or something. Just like keep it reasonable, like 7 or 8 a flight or something like that. Keep your judges happy, give them a break with some food and get it all done. But, you know, it's, there's a little calculus and there's a little kind of hope and pray kind of stuff too. Like, well, you know, because sometimes it is harder to find judges, but, you know, like I said, if you do a good job, getting the word out and we can help you with that too, as you know, we know a lot of judges up here. Some of them are willing to travel, you know, some judges are retired and really just enjoy going around judging different competitions wherever they can. And we're happy that competitions are coming back. So, you know, it's just going to be hopefully
definitely missed all that with all the pandemic stuff, you know, getting out to all these events and stuff like that. I know a lot of the people down here are really looking forward to Vail Lake. Mm-hmm. And that's we wanted to go, my new co-host and I, but we're so busy this month in April with stuff that we have going on. We're actually going to Miami, Florida for Irie Jungle Fest at Tripping Animals Brewing.
What is that?
It's their yearly anniversary beer fest that they have. It's like jungle themed, and they have you know 30 to 40 breweries and all you can drink all day kind of thing.
Wow.
Jeez. But we're going out there to do some shows with some of the breweries and then go to the festival, so should be fun.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds great, man. That sounds cool.
Yeah, some the competitions here are opening back up that haven't been on in a while, where I'll be judging the World Cup of Beer finals next week. So that should be, I mean, it's nice to have that one back. The quality of entries is really good. They judge that one at Faction and Alameda there. So,
oh, I love that brewery.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
That's one of my favorite breweries that I've ever been to, like bar none. And I've been to a lot. And I always tell everybody the view is just ridiculous. And then the beer is just as ridiculous. Like they're a great brewery, great people. I remember because actually my aunt and uncle live in Alameda. Mm-hmm. And I was up there for work in Sacramento and I got the weekend off, went and visited, and he goes, let's go to some breweries. I'm like, yeah, breweries here on the island. I remembered Almanac was there and I was like, well, go see, maybe we go there. And he's like, no, we're going to go over to Faction. And so he took me over there and I just remember oh my gosh, look at this view. This is crazy. And I fell in love with it and had the Anomaly Milk Stout, which was one of my favorite beers that they make. Several different IPAs that I really enjoyed. And after that, I was like, oh, I'm hooked. And so now I have my aunt send me down some every once in a while.
There you go. That's right? What you got to do.
Oh, well, you know, Faction, too. I one of the, well, so we had a co-host early on in our show who also passed away. Lee Shepard was my original co-judge and master level judge that I worked with for years. We started this podcast in 2012, was it? And he was, yeah,
sure.
2016.
Sounds
with us.
Good.
So yeah. I had to give a eulogy in the back of, a faction back there for him, sadly, yeah, wow. And with his family members there and a lot of people from the beer community that he'd helped educate over the years and stuff. And the most powerful moments were like, let's do a group photo. Anyone who's gotten, you know, something from their brewing knowledge, something that they, you know, Lee has inspired them in some way in their own journey. And we took a picture in front of all those barrels in the back, and it was just a massive group. And I mean, he touched a lot of lives, and I know your friend Josh did as well. So this is a real nice thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
You've already done for his family, and now, you know, passing on to another lucky brewer, hopefully.
Well, I think it's a great way to get the knowledge out, because, you know, it comes around, you know, spreading the love from another person, you know, and allowing, not to say like it's a story, but having that sort of backstory to the process, to the reason behind it, I think opens up a lot more people than normally. Oh, you know, it's just another competition, but like, no, this is like means something to a lot of people. And I think that's a great way to just kind of keep the memory alive and, you know, also spread that joy of, like, you know, the love of brewing, the love of the knowledge, the love of sharing that inspiration, is sort of the story behind, you know, the competition. I think it's cool. Yeah, it's
absolutely
good stuff.
Thank you.
Justin, when you are ready for this, if you get that point, where do people go to learn more about it, to enter their beers, or hopefully, if you're lucky, want to sign up to be judges?
So several social media sites so far that we have, just to kind of pay attention to. So we're on Facebook, Beer Dad and Brewed Podcast, and we'll be putting stuff on there, as well as on Instagram, two different pages, the Beer Dad and Brewed Podcast page, as well as I started a Kunkelfest page, and we'll be posting the information once we have all the solid dates and everything. People can follow those on Instagram and stay tuned, because we should be getting a solid date as far as the day of the judging. Okay. Here relatively shortly.
Great.
Like I said, probably be middle of May and on a Saturday, because that's when most people are available.
Sure.
And it'll be in Beaumont, California, which is relatively easy access for people, even if they're not in the area, because it's right off the 10 freeway. And it's literally like a block and a half off the 10 freeway on your way to Palm Springs, about 30, 40 minutes before you get to Palm Springs. So you're just east of like the Redlands area, San Bernardino area.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of convenient. So they can follow us on there. And I believe I might have the craft lounge. They might have some stuff on their website as well, in regards to the competition. And then we'll be posting the drop-off sites where people can drop off beers. Like I said, I know Devin at Desert Beer is going to help us out. I believe Lake Arrowhead Brewing, which I don't know if a lot of breweries up in the mountains would be willing to help us out as well. And I'm working on some other breweries. And like I said, more beer, I'll probably call. I think it's Jason, right? That's at more beer.
I don't
beer.
Know anymore, actually.
Yeah. Sounds like you have no shortage of people that are willing to pitch in and help. And, you know,
yeah, you got a support system for sure.
Talented individuals from each of those to help you in the various aspects of it. One thing that I will say is that one of the most critical and important parts of a competition is your bottle sort and labeling, where you take the entries that are carefully labeled coming into you, put them into whatever randomized numbering system you come up with for the entries, and, you know, put your own labels on them, and then remove any trace of what the brewer had left on them. Or, you know, it's that moment of truth, right? So like a trust fall almost with your volunteers to know that they're going to do a good job for you. So I find that the more specific and very detailed instructions, and the more you repeat, like, you must take this label, place it on this part of the bottle. Yeah, it's even better to have double, you know, one on the neck, one on the barrel, or the one on the cap, one on the barrel of the bottle, just so if one falls off, or, you know, there's so many different, just think of all the chances for error yeah. that this brewer did. And if, you know, you get three bottles of something and in the competition, and then, well, one's like super clear pale and two are like just thick, dark molasses. It's like something went wrong at your sort. So right. most likely you want to avoid doing the brewer that injustice of having their Kolsch judged as a, you know, imperial stout or something.
yeah. really good.
No, I totally echo what Cooper said. Yeah. I mean, that's not the sexy part of competition. It's not the most exciting or fun part, but it's critically important. Yeah. And it is more complex and time consuming than you think it's going to be.
I remember Josh telling me he had a lot of work that he had to do. Now, the Props and Hops Festival, I think they had a lot more people enter than he thought. And a lot, we had advertised it pretty heavily on our podcast, and we were still kind of in our infant stages of the podcast at the time, but we still had a decent amount of listeners. And, you know, people were sending us messages that, hey, you know, is it okay to drop it off here, or can I drop it off here? And asking us questions about styles and all this kind of stuff. So we had some good traction just from our show. And then, of course, his club's pretty popular as well, especially because they were fresh off of doing a collab with, gosh, I want to say it was McKellar San Diego. I can't remember who they did, but they had a member of their club get hit while he was riding his bicycle. And they did a tribute beer to him and one of the breweries down in San Diego. I think it was McKellar. They did a collab with his club. So because that was fresh on off the heels of that, I think that helped with the competition as well. But yeah, a lot of that poor club's been through a lot.
Jeez,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's some great brewers there. So Coachella Valley Home Brewers Club, they do a great job out there, especially dealing with that heat out there.
That's a challenge in itself. Judging in the desert. Yeah.
Yeah. That's no way I'm going to do it. All right, Justin. Well, I appreciate it, man. If there's any last little things you want to ask, go for it. If not, we'll let you go.
How about beers as far as you guys? What do you like to brew and what do you like to drink?
Oh, shit. We're getting personal.
All right.
Cooper.
That's what I do.
Well, right now I'm drinking a Maui Wowie double IPA from Altamont Beer Works nice. here in Livermore.
Terrible.
The Maui Wowie is kind of a go-to, and they release some different versions of it. They do a tropical one, a bunch of different ones, but it's just a nice, you know, a softer double IPA with just tons of late hop and just this, you know, tropical, you know, passion fruit and, you know, and just, you know, really nice fruity character to it, all from the hops. And you know, I really enjoy it. It's on Mosaic and Citra. So for me, you can't go wrong with that. It's a nice tropical beer. And I remember when they first brewed their regular Maui Wowie, it was hard to get it. I could just like bring growlers in there. And then it took off to where like everybody here knows Maui Wowie now. you know, I like brewing hoppy beers. I also make sours. I have a couple meads I need to make. I just recently became a mead judge, but I have some really good honey I need to do something with, but honey doesn't go bad. So I just feel like, oh, I can do it. Get busy. Like, I need
that's
to,
the
I
ultimate need to excuse. Yeah. Anytime a homebrew can put shit off, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Char. Answer the man's
question. You know, I like drinking pretty much anything as long as it's well made.
Yeah, you do.
And you know, it's around the Bay Area. It's,
damn, he froze. The boy froze. The boy froze.
Right at the Bay Area.
Yeah, that'll get you.
I'll just continue with the Charisms here. I can't do that.
I mean, for me, I personally, I love milds. I love low alcohol beers. I think they're the best. I despise IPAs and anything high alcohol.
And every once in a while, I have to remind myself to just go and do more variety in my drinking. But tasting, like just get a taster and taste the gamut, because sometimes there's a really good brewery and you might miss out on something really fun.
Yeah.
You know, lately lagers are coming up a lot, and it's really fun to see some quality lagers. You know, so I had my very, very first like slow pour pills, the beer stuff, slow pour pills.
That's one of my favorites.
At Humblesea in Santa Cruz. And that was like a beer moment I'll never forget. Like, it was worth the 10-minute wait, and the head was just all the way out the glass and just stayed forever.
Looks like lemon meringue pie.
Perfectly clear and wonderful.
Awesome.
Char's back, but I think he's frozen again. So,
is he frozen again?
Yeah,
looks like a robot.
We'll let him go, yeah. All right, Justin. Thanks, brother.
All right, man.
Good luck with the conference.
Yeah. On the PM, if you need any advice or help, but I do wish you the best of luck with this. And it's going to be a lot more work with it than you think, but you're going to learn from it and do better the next time, I think. But, you know, just do the best you can and try to do right by the entrance. And I'm sure you'll do fine.
It'll be worth it.
Well, I appreciate all the advice. And Brian, I'll send you, once we have like any kind of information, I'll send it to you. That way you can share it as well.
Yeah. We can put the word out with judges up here and get you some talent down there.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Hopefully.
Thanks, all right, cheers, Justin. Yep. Thanks, cheers, man. All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to change Brian Char's batteries. We're going to send a tech team out and get him situated. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back. It's Dr. Homebrew.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are back, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Spring Fest, the rundown of Spring Fest, how that happened, boots on the ground, so to speak. But, you know, of course, every year we have Tasty's Tasting Room, where we're pouring homebrews, fresh homebrews, right off the tap. And Robbie from Club Doze is joining us. Robbie, welcome, man.
Evening, JP.
How you doing? Good. I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. I'm getting along.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, man. So we thought it'd be cool to have you on and talk a little bit about, you know, how organizing all that went, especially, you know, in light of Tasty not being there. I mean, he didn't pour shit at the fest, but he was a big part in setting it up and talking to everybody and spread the word.
He was a big part of getting it all going and getting everyone to the tent.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You know, those are tough boots to fill, but, you know, Justin contacted me back in December, I guess it was, and asked if Doze was interested in helping organize Tasty's Tasting Room, you know, this year. For, I guess, context of anyone that doesn't know, Spring Brews Festival is run by the Brewing Network. Used to be Winter Brews, became Spring Brews, so now it's just warmer.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's nice.
Yeah, good.
And, you know, Mike Tasty McDowell ran a homebrew tent in amongst all the commercial breweries. And it really, I mean, the first festival I went to was, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, probably. Mm-hmm. And it really was the kind of the center of the festival. I mean, you know, what you were saying earlier is about Tasty. I mean, he brought everyone together, right?
So yeah,
he would just gather everyone to come to the homebrew tent, and there's always a great selection of beers and ciders and sometimes meads. And so yeah, Justin asked us back in December if we would like to carry on the legacy.
Get
it going.
Yeah. Cool. And clearly you said yeah. Was that something that you were maybe a little bit nervous about? I mean, now you guys have done competitions before and organized club competitions, so I imagine it's not that much different, but it is still like, did you bring gas? You know, that kind of stuff. Make sure people have stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people bring gas to beer festivals one way or another.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was an instant yes. Okay. I mean, we know and love Tasty. Tasty was obviously a member of Doze, but above and beyond that, in our community, our beer community. So it was a no-brainer to just say yes right off the bat. Sure, organizing these things is difficult, and, you know, I, for one, totally forgot that we've not really done this for 2 years. So there's like a lot of muscle memory, you know, once you get into sort of festival season. And, you know, as homebrewers, we don't do every beer festival out there, but we're invited to some of them and we pour. So you get that muscle memory and you get that kind of, you know, you get the feel for it. And I think we were lucky as a club, we turned 25 years old last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the end of last year, we did do an anniversary party. So kind of between Delta and Omicron, this is how I remember things now, is between strains of COVID.
Right.
So between, literally, as luck would have it, in that wonderful dip between those two stellar pieces of virus, we did our 25th anniversary. So we kind of had a little bit of practice. But yeah, it's you know, everyone steps up. Everyone wants to help. We have, our club has two jockey boxes, so we have 8 taps that we can, you know, to hand. We don't have to figure out who's bringing the jockey box, who has a picnic tap, whatever. We've got like all of that together. We reached out to Bay Area Mashers and obviously to Mad D's because we wanted like some participation above and beyond Doe's. I mean, that was the other big thing about Tasty and how he rolled was it wasn't just about one brewery or one homebrew club or whatever. It really was that community. So we reached out and Brian and Ron, who's the president of Mad Z's, came and they brought their jockey box.
I appreciated the way that you twisted people's arms to come in too, because you know it's on my radar. It's like oh yeah, I should pour, and then sometimes things just fill in and I can't make it. But like you were talking to us early, like getting interest, putting the sign up sheet out there. Yeah, like sure, I'll put a keg in and come pour some beer with you. And you know, I even volunteered for part of the festival and had a little fun, just you know, a little break from the constant like sampling and just kind of being a part of like and people coming in and out of there that thanked me for volunteering and stuff. It was nice. It was like such a chill vibe at this whole event. And I was one thing that I was just the proudest of, and you did a great job with the tasting room, but you know, it really was the focus of you know, the center, and we had a large area and people just standing around. I would bring people from other booths around to taste some beers and talk about them. And everybody there was enjoying it and asking where they could buy the beer.
Yeah. Well, that's the funniest thing. I mean, as a home brewer, right. It's wonderful to pour your beer to the public. You know, everyone says about giving beer to your friends and they always love it, whatever, da 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 da. But like when you have some random stranger and they're drinking your beer out of a glass that you poured them, it's cool. It feels cool to do.
It does.
You get to pretend to be professionals for half a second or whatever. and it's awesome.
Without all the liability. But
the funniest thing is when people are like, so where can I buy this? And you're like, you can't. Get back to the end of the line and come back and get another glass. That's the only way you're going to get some more of this.
Yeah.
And people dug that, and it's you know it was again this year, and I don't think I'm exaggerating. I think Justin and Bevo and all the organizers at the festival would agree. We still had the longest lines again. It was just constant. We had 21 beers and one cider on, so we had like a huge array of different styles. JP, you'd have been happy. There was like dark milds and English golden ales, and like a lot of you know. Czech pale lagers and a lot of low ABV stuff. It wasn't just all like triple hazy IPAs or anything like that. It was a huge range of styles.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. It's fun.
Is that stuff that people wanted to bring, or is that stuff that you were like, hey, let's broaden the horizon a little bit? Or is that what people are just brewing now in general?
I mean, I think... You know, we're lucky in Doe's, we have a lot of members, so there's a lot of different styles that are being covered. So I think that's part of it. We didn't set out any kind of mandate about what beer style people should brew. The only mandate we had, and we're going to change it next year because we realized there really should have been a second beer that should have been there. Mm-hmm. So Paul Brown, who I think you guys know, obviously, ex-president of Doe's, he brewed Janet's Brown. So we had a keg of Janet's Brown.
Oh, yeah.
There. And I think, assuming you guys have us back next year, next year we'll also do a Blind Pig clone. That just, you know, as something of meaning in Tasty's world, that would seem appropriate.
Yeah.
But yeah, people just, you know, people brew what they want to for the festival, or they have beers around. So, I mean... I brought my English barley wine. That's not something I'm gonna like brew once I hear about the festival, because it's you know it takes a year to age and whatever. So it was a keg that I had. I wanted to serve it at a festival. This was the perfect event to do that.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture of the two, really. The hardest thing, and I don't understand why this is the case, but getting brewers to tell you what the name of the beer is, that's the hardest thing.
I had to make up a name for mine.
Yes.
Because the real name is too offensive. You can't say it on the radio.
Your beer would not have been called out on the stage at GABF, that's for sure.
That is. It's either they don't have a name and they're like, oh, I don't know. It's the you know Dave's Pale Ale, man. I don't know. Or it's some weird like you know insult to their neighbor.
And that's anything's fine. It's just when you're coming like. You know, you were talking about organizing a competition earlier, and that's a lot of work. Organizing people at a beer festival is a lot of work too. And there's just certain things, if you know, then it just makes it a lot easier beforehand. Cause like, you know, we've got to like write the beer board and we've got to like do all this stuff and you want to be set right. up, you know, ahead of time so that people at the booth can like go and meet other brewers before the, you know, that's part of the perks, right? You get in early so you can go and like meet the other brewers before like the whole crowds get in there. You can have this whole like top this whole thing. So you just want to be, you know, you want to be on top of it and you want to be organized. And I think, you know, again, we're a little bit rusty because of the pandemic, but you know, that said, I think actually everything went pretty smoothly and we were like ready on time. And you know, you always have like jockey boxes never work properly. That's just
they really don't, man. No, they don't. Just
pain in the ass to pour beer properly.
We had one that was pouring really foamy. That sorry about that.
That one had issues. But then one of our like we have two jockey boxes that are the same. They're built the same. They're the same component. One of them works fine, and the other one there's always a problem. And they're exactly basically the same jockey boxes. So there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah, but just the logistics of getting a lot of beer into a lot of people's hands. You know, you did very well at that. For a while, the line was getting long. And I was getting kind of concerned. I was like, oh, we need to go out and like pour beer for people out the line. But then, you know, I mean, people wanted certain things and they didn't necessarily want what we were trying to bring out and pour there. So, but later you guys were like, you really have to like rope people in, like, come up, step up.
Get
up
oh, yeah. You've got to be brutal.
You got to motivate them.
You're like, this guy doesn't know what he wants. So you behind, you look like you're thirsty.
Skip around. Here's beer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's work. It's a job. You
know? It's like herding cats. Yeah.
It is like herding cats. But it's a lot of fun. You know? They're
fun cats to talk to. And they really are interested. And they come back and try one. Then they try another. And they experience and the brewers were bringing their A game. I think that I mean there was a
solid, all the beers were great,
yeah. I didn't get drunk any of them, try all of them, but let's taste this Czech pale or early in the day. It was fantastic. Like
wow, that was one of the standout.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a little biased because of the UV and whatever, but it really was a great lager.
Just clean. And then people come around and tasting my sours and talking to me about my weird sour baking things. And, you know,
Pavel's cider, the passion of the Pavel, the cider that he made was killer. I mean, everyone stepped up and brought their egg. I mean, JP, next year maybe you can make an oatmeal stout for Tasty's Tasting Room. I'm just saying.
Hell no. That's work, dude.
Yeah, but you've got a year. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I do have, I mean, that's a timeline I could probably work out. We'll see. I don't know, maybe. We'll see.
You have a machine that can make the beer for you. You just push a button. Yeah. You know?
But it'll take you a year to come up with the name, so that's the problem.
Well, it's JP's Oatmeal Stout. Like, I brewed it on Jamil's pilot system a couple months ago, and by brewed, I mean showed up for an hour. And Jamil's like, what do you want to call it? I'm like, I don't know. JP's Oatmeal Stout? It's like, okay, there you go. It's not really a good sales name, but whatever. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it was a hit. It sounds like Tasty Taste Room went off pretty well.
It did.
And it sounds like everyone was able to, you know, come together and get you beers on time and get all the stuff you needed and you know, homebrewers working together. Was it just Doe's or did you put the call out? Was it everybody? I actually don't really know how it works.
So Doe's, Bay Area Mashers, and Mad Z's were the three clubs. And again, you know, hopefully next year we can broaden it out a bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To other Bay Area clubs. You know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, I'd love to have like a cask, you know, a cask of something on is always fun at a festival. Those kind of things are you know, more fun to do. The spectacle of tapping a cask is always a good thing. But you know, Tasty, I hope we did you proud, mate. You know, I hope you look down and smile in the lines, and that's really like, that's why we did it. So
there you go.
Did you get around and do any tasting yourself, or were you too busy running the booth to go around to some of the amazing breweries that were there?
Very early on, I stopped at a couple of places, and then that was about it. You don't go there to go and necessarily drink at all of the booths.
Right. No. Yeah, I did. But, I definitely did.
You know, it's cool to like see Brian Hunt running around with like cans of Death and Taxes and, you know, all of that. It's like, it's just great, like beer community people watching.
Yeah, it's a spectacle in and of itself. Yeah. Absolutely.
We chatted with him at the end of the day. I came home with a little bit of, don't tell anyone, but yeah, a little bit of Death and Taxes in my fridge right now. So
nice. Which everyone should have some Death and Taxes in their fridges.
Okay? Yeah, it's good stuff. Absolutely.
Fucking great beer.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's the first time I ever had it. It was at a diner in Cotati, which is like a little suburb of like Santa Rosa, Petaluma. Right. It's like right there, right? A little sleepy, bedroom community. It was at a diner for breakfast. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. Had an omelet and a pint of Death and Taxes, and it was one of the better breakfasts I've ever had in my entire life. Works.
Well, I also got to tell him a story about my first date with my soon-to-be wife, and we were at the Bistro in Hayward, and she ordered a tipple, Moonlight Tipple, and then we were wildly gesturing, and somehow I managed to spill it on her. I tipped the tipple on to her. She like just had this moment where she's like, okay, I can get really freaked out and just not let this happen, or just, I kind of like this guy. So let's just let that one roll off, so to speak. And I was like, but yeah. So I tipped a tipple.
It's probably both.
We're married now to this day. So
yeah.
You got to hear that story. That was kind of fun.
That's good.
But there's also just so many different, beer knowledgeable people there. And it was just a great
day. And brewers that turn up. I mean, that's the, another great thing about festivals, right? Is you want to be at the ones that the brewers or people literally like have founded the brewery are there, and you can just like talk to them about the beer and say thanks for making the beer if you'd like it or whatever it is. And it's not just a bunch of sales reps or whatever. And that's fine if you just want to drink the beer, but this is it's a community thing. And, again, to go back to the Tasty Tasty Room, that's what that is, but that's what the whole festival was. And that's certainly why I love it, why Doze loves it, and why there wasn't a second thought about helping out. And then we just figured out the rest kind of after saying yes.
For sure.
Thanks for doing it, man.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. Yeah, we'll appreciate it, man. Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we'll let you split, man. Go enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for chatting.
Cheers, Robbie. All right.
Take it easy.
All right, we are going to take our last break. We're going to come right back and wrap things up here. And Dr. Homebrew, hang on. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody.
Hey, JP, how does someone get a beer on this show if they want to send something in?
I don't know. Brian Shard, you tell them. You haven't said a word in like an hour.
That's because my internet kind of cut out for about 10 minutes there. My internet was great until my internet provider got bought by some other company, and now it's been out for like chunks of time, multiple days in the last week. So I may be changing my internet in the next month or two if this keeps up. We'll see.
There you go.
But I believe we get beers on this show by first you, the listener, must brew them. And then you would send them an email to Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com.
That's right.
Yep. And you could even send him an email before you brew your beer and ask him, hey, Brian, how do you feel about a smoked double goza?
And that's Brian with an I. I'm not going to turn down any beer, by the way. I say smoke double goza. Yeah, send it.
Yeah.
And I know, for me, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah, send a smoke double goza in here. I'll drink the hell out of that.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
Chicken flavored beer. Okay, yeah, send it. I don't care.
Beer with actual raw chicken in it? No, don't do that, because this is Dr. Homebrew, not Dr. Salmonella, and we don't really know how to treat Salmonella other than go to a licensed medical practitioner.
Right.
Yeah, we want to be here for the next show.
Yes.
Well, I mean, sort of. I mean, be alive for the next show happens, not necessarily maybe be on the next show. You know what I mean? Yeah, Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. Yeah, for sure.
Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com.
And
we'll take pretty much any beverage, like Crystal Light. You just kind of shake some of that powder into some water and bottle that up. We'll take sake. We'll take beer, wine.
Hard seltzer. Why not?
Yep. You got it. Non-alcoholic beer.
The hazier and the more IPA-like you can make it, the better for us, please.
That's good stuff. I love that.
Like double hazy IPAs, I want to show it just those.
Hazy Pilsner. That's a good one. Yeah, hazy pills.
I've seen those. I don't want it. I don't want anything like that.
I believe that's a Keller beer, and those can be really good.
I barely want double beer right now. I'm sort of like not drinking anything. I sort of don't
dry
care.
Dry hopped water.
I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with taking a break from beer for a while. That's cool.
Yeah, like I think that's why I like the non-alcoholic, you know, vibe that's happening right now. It's because I can have a beer when I don't want just another carbonated water. You know what I mean?
Or, it's like, okay. Yeah. Eating, like, every beer you drink is like eating a donut. You think about that too.
Yeah,
like,
okay. I mean, it's a calorie thing too, for sure. But I don't know. I'm into it, and I don't know when I'll stop. But I don't even just like wine or whatever. I'm sort of like not really feeling alcohol lately.
That's cool. Can't stop, won't stop.
I don't know. I guess. Anyway, that's my weird vibe.
But can't right, stop, can't stop stopping. That's what I mean.
All right, everyone. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And then, I guess we'll see you in April sometime. We got to plan that show and figure out what's going on there. And again, if you want to send in beers and you want to help make the show the best thing for you, Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. Send us some homemade fermented nonsense.
All right. You want to get weird with us? Yeah.
Thanks a lot, everybody. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Cheers.